Good morning, church. It's good to see you. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We're going to be in there in just a moment. If it's been a while since you've been here and you've not been following along on the live stream, we are getting near the end of our Aroma of Christ series on the book of 2 Corinthians. And so we're in chapter 11, and it's a different chapter. And I think that you'll see that when we get into it. Can you turn that down just a little bit? Thank you. Before we do that, though, I want to add my thanks to our guys up there who had that scaffolding in here Thursday afternoon. And I don't have to tell you who that is because of the shorts. You know who that is. It doesn't matter if it's 10 degrees outside. Craig is always, Bobby is right there, and Lloyd's up there and had some helpers, but they've got this thing like quadruple bolted into the side beams up there, so and it's really heavy. So anyway, you might not even notice the difference of that, but I know it's been something that we've needed, so I wanted to thank those guys for doing that. As we think about what Paul is going to say in this chapter, I want you to imagine. Can you guys hear me okay? It seems like it's going in now. I don't think we're wrong here. Something else is coming. I'm not sure what. I have a green light. So. Also, add to your prayer list, if you can hear me. Add to your prayer list little Gage Williams, Bridget and Wes's little grandson. He's still going to be undergoing some tests pretty soon. Okay.
Test. There we go. I would say something in ATC language, but that would mess you. Okay. How about that? Can you hear me now? Good. Too loud? Dave Downey, is it too loud back there? Come down just a hair, maybe. Okay. All right. Don't you just love technology? Speaking of technology, if you are interested in helping Chris Dealey up there in the sound room, please plan on being at that meeting 2 weeks from today. One of the neat little tricks that they'll show you, there's a clock up there. They'll show you how to set that clock about 10 minutes fast when the sermon time comes. So I'll just let you interpret what that means from my standpoint down here. So anyway, they have all kinds of little tricks like that up there. But keep in mind what Paul is doing. And if you can imagine, when these letters in the first century were circulated, they didn't have the Bible like we have it. They had a lot of the Old Testament scriptures. They certainly didn't have a canonized New Testament. That didn't come about till decades and centuries later. And so they were reading these letters that the apostles had written. And can you imagine the first time that these letters arrived at a church? And probably through courier, at least through 1st and 2nd Corinthians, probably Titus brought these letters. And now here they are all gathered together, whether it's in a synagogue or in someone's home or by a riverside, wherever it was, in a house church, they were all reading this letter. Please, you got to come this week, because Paul has sent us another letter. He's answered some of our questions. He's talking about things, and you've got to be here. And they read. They sat and read. Someone read that. It might have been Titus. We don't know who it was who read those letters for the very first time. Now, I can imagine when they got to chapter 11, whoever was reading that had pre-read that, kind of like me. I don't just get up here cold. I pre-read the text. I pre-read my notes. And when you're going to read something in public, you probably read it beforehand. So let's just say it was Titus. Titus probably read this letter. He knew what was in the letter. And he's thinking, wow, okay, chapter 11. We get the sense that Paul was really dreading this moment when he wrote it. Paul has encourage this church. He holds this church very, very close. The new young converts there were very special to him, and he was concerned about all the churches. And yet there was behind Paul, some of these teachers he calls super apostles who would come in, and we'll get to a little bit of that in just a moment, and he's having to address that. He's having to say some difficult things and some hard things for the sake of the church, and as Charlie mentioned a few minutes ago, what was going on there was they were losing their focus on Christ. They were losing their focus on Christ, to things that didn't matter as much, to things that were distracting them. And so Paul is pretty much transparent, because he is even going to say, he says, you know, I'm not talking as the Lord would, but I'm talking as a fool. He says that in verse 17, and if you know 1 Corinthians, you remember Paul did the same thing in that letter. When he went off, he was talking about some marriage issues, and he said, this is me speaking, it's not the Lord. Though the compilation of all this is still inspired, Paul is basically going off on his own a little bit here. And he says in verse 23, he says, I might be out of my mind to talk like this. And these words were hard, but they were needed conversations. So let me give you a brief background, and then we're going to actually read the text, the whole chapter. It doesn't take that long, and I'm going to read it in the Message. I've added my own edits and translations to that because it's kind of more of a conversation, and it'll give you more of a sense of what's going on than just reading it from perhaps the NIV or the ESV or another translation. But as Paul was going through these Roman provinces, preaching the gospel, he was often followed by these teachers who would show up maybe months later or weeks later, and they were trying to steal attention from Christ, from Paul, and they're trying to place that attention on themselves. And they were doing that to these new converts, this young church. And these guys would arrive under false pretenses. From the most part, from what Paul says, they were very, very eloquent and smooth speakers. And they tried to paint Paul as some kind of, you know, country hick, some kind of hayseed who really didn't know what he was talking about when he came through. You know, you picture this short, bald-headed guy who is not an eloquent speaker in and of as the world would look at it. And he was a former Pharisee and a former Jew, so they questioned all of his credibility. And Paul sarcastically refers to these people who have been coming in as these super apostles. He says that tongue-in-cheek, I think. So Paul doesn't identify the specific false teaching of these fake apostles at Corinth. They were likely Jewish teachers. We get that from verse 22 if you want to have your eyes go down to that text. So it's possible that they were espousing maybe that similar works-based salvation that the Galatian false teachers were teaching, that you can be saved by your good works, by your meritorious box-checking in religion, and you need to obey all these laws of the Jews. You need to be circumcised before you could become a Christian. And Paul says, no, the focus is on Jesus Christ alone. So that may have been part of what they were doing, but it's pretty clear that some of these people at Corinth had become infatuated with these teachers. Or they had become infatuated with their teaching, or perhaps both. And Paul warns them in so many words, and here's the warning in contemporary language today. It's dangerous, Paul is telling the church, for any individual, any church, to think so highly of a teacher that they disregard what that person may be teaching. And that's a relevant message for all times, all ages. Whoever stands before you in any context and says, this is what God says, Paul says, be careful and check that with what you know to be true. And Paul is referring back to his previous letter and saying, Christ, the gospel is true. And whatever else aside from that, be very, very careful before you pay attention to it. So we not only don't know specifically what the false teaching was, we don't know who these false apostles were, all right? He didn't name them. But we do know that they were causing the church to question Paul's Christ-given authority. They were causing the church to discount Paul's genuine concern for their spiritual welfare and what was best for this young church. And we also know that, worst of all, they were causing this church to be distracted from focusing their trust alone on the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so Paul didn't have a resume filled with wonderful things. He didn't have all these polished words as these professional speakers had as they came through. But Paul knew that the church knew him. And Paul was daily pouring his heart out, his soul out, his energy out, and his prayer life out for all of his new converts, all of these churches. And he was trying to appeal to these new converts to listen to what he has said. So he reminds the church that he has authority. He reminds the church that his qualifications look a little bit different from these super apostles who've come in, these polished professional speakers, okay? They're wearing their nice fancy suits. For some reason, I think of these guys with white shoes. I don't know why that comes into my mind, but that's just what comes into my mind, these super apostles. And he's saying, I have a different kind of resume. My qualifications are of a heavenly kind. My qualifications are of a cross-centered kind. And instead of hiding those things which would make Paul appear weak and vulnerable, Paul cites those things, and he rejoices in those things, and he counts all things as trash, as garbage, as dung, compared to the good news of Jesus Christ. That's a message that every church in every age needs to hear, that you can narrow it all down, and it still comes back only and forever to be on the cross of Jesus. And so what I'm going to do now, as I said, I'm going to read through the text, and it's going to be some of the message, some of my own translation, and it'll take us about, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes to read through that. But I want you to get a sense of the whole context. I actually went through and said, maybe I can leave this paragraph out, you know, for time, for length, and I'm not going to have it on the slide, so you can just kind of sit back and either read it on your device or just follow along and listen. And then what we're going to do after that, we're going to make some four brief applications, okay? So here's the plan. That's what we're going to do. So here's what Paul is saying. He says, I hope you will indulge a little foolish aside from me. Forgive me for going off, but I care so much about you. This is the passion of God burning inside me. I promised your hand in marriage to Christ, presented you as a pure virgin, and now I'm afraid that exactly as the snake seduced Eve, with his smooth tongue, you are being lured away from the simple purity of your love for Christ. It seems that if someone shows up preaching another Jesus than we preach to you, you put up with him quite nicely. But if you tolerate these big shot apostles, why can't you at least listen to simple-minded me? It's true. I haven't mastered that smooth eloquence that impresses you so much. But when I do open my mouth, at least I know what I'm talking about. And as you know, we have not taken a penny from you nor kept any truth from you. I wonder, imagine these Corinthians hearing this for the first time. I wonder, did I make a bad mistake in coming to you with God's message without asking for something in return? Did I make a mistake serving you free of charge so that you wouldn't be inconvenienced by me? It turns out that the other churches paid my way so that you could have a free ride. My needs were always supplied by the believers from Macedonia. We talked about that last week. I was careful never to be a burden to you, and I never will be, and you can count on it. With Christ as my witness, I would die before taking your money. I'm giving nobody grounds for lumping me in with those money-hungry preachers that you like to listen to. They are fake apostles. They pose as Christ's servants, but they are frauds to the core. Satan does it all the time. He dresses up as a beautiful angel of light. So it shouldn't surprise me. It shouldn't surprise you. But they're not getting by with anything. One day, God knows that they will pay for it. Let me come back to where I started. And please don't hold it against me if I rant on a little bit more. By the way, I didn't learn this kind of talk from Christ. Nope. It's a bad habit I picked up from those circus preachers who are so popular these days, so please tolerate me. After all, you admire and tolerate these imposters who rob you from your freedom. They rip you off. They steal you blind. They put you down. They even slap your face. And I shouldn't admit it to you, but our stomachs aren't really strong enough to tolerate that kind of stuff. Since you think so highly of these egomaniacs who talk about themselves, let me try my hand at it. Do they brag of being Hebrews, of Israelites, of the pure race of Abraham? Well, I'm all those things. Are they servants of Christ? Not more than I am. And then Paul puts this parenthetical in there. I can't believe I'm saying these things. It's crazy for me to talk this way. But I started, and now I'm going to finish. Verse 23, I've worked much harder. I've been jailed more often. I've been beaten up more times than I can count. I've been at death's door time after time. I've been flogged 5 times with 39 lashes, beaten by Roman rods 3 times, battered with rocks 1 time. I've been shipwrecked 3 times, stranded in the ocean overnight and a day. In hard traveling, year in and year out, I've had to ford rivers, fend off robbers, struggle with friends and foes. I've been at risk in cities and in the country, endangered by desert sun, sea storm, and betrayed by those I thought were my brothers. I've known drudgery. I've known hard labor. I've known many a long and lonely night without sleep. I've missed many a meal. I've been blasted by the cold, naked to the weather. And that's not the half of it. When you throw in all the daily pressures and anxieties of all the churches that I deal with, I'm invested in you. When you feel weak and duped into sinning, I feel it with you. The desperation in my bones as an angry fire burns in my gut because of what these false teachers are telling you. If I have to brag about myself, I'm going to brag about the humiliations that make me like Jesus Christ. God knows I'm not lying. And he finishes with this, case in point. Remember that time I was in Damascus and the governor posted guards at the city gates to arrest me? I hid. I crawled through a window. I was let down in a basket, and I had to run for my life, barely slipping through the governor's hands. And there's more. It's a vision of heaven. He'll talk about that next week. But Paul is saying in all of these things, I don't have a resume. I can't compete with these guys who are coming in after me. But you know me. You know what I've sacrificed for you. I love you. I've spent time with you. You know my message is centered on the cross and on Jesus Christ. Please, please don't become distracted. So what he's doing with this church is what he's doing with all churches. He's talking about what it looks like to be a mature disciple. He's talking about what it looks like for us to have grown to the point we are now, from the point that we were when we came to Christ, when we didn't know very much. We knew very little, but now we've grown and it's changed how we live. And so he's talking about mature discipleship, and that's kind of the task we're going to take over the next couple of minutes as we looked on what mature discipleship is implied through these passages. First of all, Paul is saying that mature discipleship to this church at Corinth and to us reflects the way of the cross. When people see you, if they see the cross, if they see Jesus in your life, they know that's not a novice Christian. That's someone who keeps Christ at the spiritual center of his life. Following Jesus or living in any capacity of spiritual leadership is not the way of fame and upward mobility, as these false apostles were having you think. It's not a leadership of eloquence. I'm glad I don't have to try to compete with people who are much better speakers and more eloquent than I am. I don't have to worry about that. Because it's not about how the message is presented, it's about what the message is. And it's backed up with your lives and with my life. And that's what Paul is saying. It's not a leadership of eloquence, of power or control, but it's a pathway of surrender. It's a pathway of humility that ends on the cross. That's what a mature disciple knows. that he reflects the way of the cross. Listen to Hebrews 13. And so Jesus also suffered outside the city gate to make the people holy through his own blood. Let us then, what, brag about ourselves, show our fancy resume, have a fancy sermon? No, he says, let us then go to him outside the camp, to a place of disgrace, bearing the disgrace that he bore. For here we do not have an enduring city, but we're looking for the city that is to come. So mature discipleship reflects the cross in our life. And that's what he's asking these Corinthians to do. Forget about all this fancy fluff that these false, fake, super apostles are trying to convince you of. Just live with Jesus as the center of your life. And that's where mature discipleship leads us, to the place of Jesus and his death, burial, and resurrection as the center of our message. It's the center of our ministry. It sounds like these false apostles were pretty much short-timers. We don't know if they were members there or if they were just passing through, if they were transient. We don't know. But they had no personal investment, apparently, in the local church. And they were sowing divisive seed. They were coming in and saying, hey, this is not right. You shouldn't do this. And Paul was saying, who are you folks? You don't even know this church. Don't come in here and try to police them. Leave them alone. They were sowing divisive seed, and they were taking the focus away from Christ, and they were placing it on themselves. In the New Testament, false teaching has little to do with worship practices or differing views on various doctrines. But false teaching in the New Testament has everything to do with mischaracterizing the gospel. It has everything to do with mischaracterizing the gospel and undermining grace. It has everything to do with misrepresenting who Jesus is as God in the flesh. And the only way back to the Father is the Lord of Lords. And Paul saw this type of false teaching taking place, not only in Galatia, but in Corinth. And so a passage that reminds us to stay focused on the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ is Galatians 6, and we'll look at another passage after this. May I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, how do you boast in a cross? How do you boast in an instrument of gruesome torture and death? Paul said, that's my life. That's your life. Through which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. Neither circumcision nor uncircumcision means anything. And that was a big deal back then. I can't even compare it to what big deal of doctrine that might be in the church today. But circumcision was the big issue. He says, none of that matters. What counts is the new creation in you. Peace and mercy to all who follow this rule, to the Israel of God, which includes Gentiles. And then I'm sure that as whoever was reading this letter to the Corinthians, their minds went back to that first letter. Someone probably had that first letter, and they were referencing it, looking back on it. And Paul says this, now, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel that I preached to you. Implicitly saying, I want you to compare it to what you've heard of these super apostles and what type of Jesus they've been preaching. I want to remind you of the gospel that I preached to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel, you are saved. What these guys are telling you is not going to save you. It may cause the opposite effect. It may cause you to drift further away from Christ and salvation. By this gospel, you are saved, if you firmly hold to that word that I preach to you. Otherwise, you believed in vain. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance. Circumcision, as big as you think it is not of first importance. You pick any issue or doctrine or battle or debate that goes on in churches today, Paul says, those are not of first importance. What is first important is that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures. That he was buried. That he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures. And so mature discipleship places Jesus and his death, burial, and resurrection at the center of who we are every day, at the center of our message, and at the center of our ministry. Thirdly, mature discipleship goes beyond speaking the gospel. It lives the gospel. We need to speak the gospel. But how the message comes out can often have issues, right? It's far less than perfect when we try to speak and convince and share the message of Jesus. But when you live the gospel, people have a hard time misinterpreting that. Remember Paul's first words to the Corinthians? 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, again referencing that first letter, he says, "My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words." Okay, if that's your criteria, church, he says, about whether which message you should listen to, I can't fight that battle. He said, "My words were not with the wisdom of the world, and they were not persuasive, but they were with what? A life. A demonstration of the Spirit living in me, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power." 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 2 and 4. Paul had just come from Athens. Okay, when Paul had arrived in Corinth, if you want to see the actual literal context of where Paul had just been, it's in Acts chapter 17 and Acts chapter 18. Paul had just spoken on Mars Hill. Paul can give a real good intellectual speech, by the way. He's kind of underplaying his hand here, saying, you know, I don't have eloquent words. I'm not a very good speaker. He really wasn't. But boy, did he give a sermon in Acts 17 to the most intelligent, wise, knowledgeable, influential, rich people in the world. And what'd they do with it? They ignored it. There's a record of maybe one or two converts, but we have no evidence that there's ever been a church established in Athens. And so Paul says, all right, I'm going to the common folks in Corinth. I'm going to the lower middle class, the poverty stricken. That's where I'm going. And Paul is capable of giving a brilliant speech. But those powerful, rich intellectuals in Greece really didn't have time for it. They were curious about it. So he came to the nobodies. He came to Corinth. And when he came, he arrived alone. He was later joined by Titus and some others, but Paul was on his own. He was discouraged, and he was scared. He was scared to be in this city because when Paul got to Corinth, he saw all of the paganism, all the idolatry, all of the immorality. And he said, how in the world am I going to do this? And he set his mind, I'm going to get out of here, God. Acts 18:10, God speaks to him and says, Paul, I feel your heart racing. Chill out. Don't be afraid because I have many people in this city. Acts 18:10. Paul didn't come to them with persuasive words, but he came to them with a lifestyle, a demonstration of what God does, not in our best moments. It's pretty easy to brag about what God does in our best moments when we're on that spiritual high and everything in life seems to be cruising along. Paul says, I came to you in demonstration of what God does in weakness. When we are scared, when we are confused, when we are uncertain, when we are grieving, when we don't know where to turn to next, that's when God shines in our weakness. He says, my words were not eloquent like those who so impress you. You knew who I was then, and you know who I am now. You've seen my faith in action. You've seen my compassion. You've witnessed my grace, and you know the endurance that I have in the trials and suffering. Yeah, you're not wise or rich or influential, he tells them, but you've been empowered just like I have by the Holy Spirit of God dwelling in you. And your faith won't rely on words. It won't rely on eloquent sermons, but your faith will rely in God's power, who will use what the world considers weakness to change lives. What you think is a weakness in your own life, God says specifically, I will use that weakness to glorify my name. What a word of hope. As we stumble through the day and stumble with our words and say, man, God, I messed up again. God says, I know that weakness. And I will use it to glorify me if you give me your heart. And finally this morning, mature discipleship truly, truly understands that trial and hardship and suffering is temporary compared to the eternal weight of glory that awaits children of God. Yeah, we go through a lot. We've been through a lot, and we will continue to go through a lot because we live on a planet filled with people like us. Remember the quote from the bulletin article this morning? G.K. Chesterton was asked, you know, what's wrong with the world? This humble preacher said, I am. Maybe that's a good place for us to start. Knowing that even though our sinfulness, can often be a part of the problem, we live in hope of a place where we'll never sin again. Can you imagine that? Never sin again. Not in thought, not in word, not in action, not in reaction. Whatever you go through, Paul is telling this church, this young church who needs something to hold on to, whatever you go through because of Christ is worth it. He says, you know, we're not called to debate and pick fights. There's enough division and persecution in the world without us throwing fuel on those fires. Jesus assures us that just claiming him as Lord and adopting Jesus' morality is provocative enough to a secular culture. We don't have to do anything else. Just live as Jesus lived. And persecution will find you. You don't have to go looking for it. Suffering in the name of Christ, depending on where you live, could mean being silenced. It could mean being forced underground, and this would happen in a few years hence to the Corinthian church and all churches in the late first century and beyond because of persecution. And depending on where you live in our world today, it could mean the same thing. It could mean imprisonment. It could mean torture. It could mean even death. But likely for you and I in 21st century America, it will be more of an emotional persecution. It will be more of a social persecution where you are ignored, where you maybe are disregarded because of your faith, or maybe you're even laughed at or ridiculed for believing that foolish message of salvation, of a crucified and risen Lord. Paul says, whatever the case, whatever you endure now is not worthy to be compared with what's coming. It's not worthy to be compared with eternal life that is to come. We'll finish with these two passages. Here's the first one. Remember Paul's words to young Timothy? Everyone who lives a life godly in Christ Jesus, what's going to happen? You're going to be persecuted. You may not be thrown in jail in America for that. You might. I don't know the way things are going. But you're going to be persecuted some way. There are parts of the world now that you go to, and if you do what I'm doing here today, I would lose my life. And then they would come looking for my family. And this is what Paul is dealing with. This is what the early church had to deal with. But he says, everyone who lives godly in Christ Jesus is going to suffer persecution. And then he says to the Roman church, I know all that. Here's my list, Corinthian church, of what all I've been through, and this is only a reflection of what probably I will continue to go through. But this is not only a word of hope in Romans 18 for the early church, it's a word of hope for every single one of you. I consider that our present sufferings are not worthy to be compared with the glory that will be revealed in us. It's a strange last phrase. Because yes, it's looking forward to the glory that will be revealed one day in the new heavens and the new earth when we're in the presence of God forever. But notice the present tense of it. When you consider the sufferings that you're going through, They are nothing to be compared to the glory that's being revealed in you right now. Because God is working in your weakness, and it's bringing him glory. I think the Corinthian church needed to hear that more than anything. And I would like to think, after whoever it was, maybe Titus, read this chapter, that the Corinthians were saying, wow. And I think those false teachers are kind of slinking out the back door, you know. They were trying to run for cover because they knew these folks were going to look at them and say, ah, okay, that's what you guys are about. That's what you're trying to do to us. Paul said, the cross is what we glory in. And so as we think about a message, a hard message from Paul, keep in mind that there are times when we have to be the bearers of the hard message for those that we love. We always do that, speaking the truth in love. We always do it with kindness and compassion, but we must do it because we may be saving one of our loved ones from going past the brink of destruction. And Paul felt that with this church, and he felt that these strong words were worth it, even though he might have been saying, you know, I don't know how where inspiration begins and ends, or if he even knew about that. He said, but this isn't the Lord speaking. I'm just going to speak from my gut because I know I've got some hard things to say, and I don't want to indict Jesus with the bad words that I'm going to use. But you need to hear it. And he ends up encouraging and building up and reminding this church how much he loves them and what Christ did for them. And that's something that we can live with every single day. If we can help you by you responding in a public way this morning, if you want to be baptized into Christ, if you want to simply make us known of a prayer need that you have, a spiritual need that you have, we are happy to help you with that. So please don't leave here if something is on your heart unresolved to do something about it. You may just need to go home and pray about it. You may need to talk to your spouse or a friend about something that's going on and ask them to pray for you. We are here as a family to help each other, and I'm so thankful for each and every one of you. So let's stand together. Charlie, lead us in a song, would you?